live from my apartment. It's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who actually just realized that he forgot to do a podcast for his 3,000th podcast 2 weeks ago. It's Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rob's Podcast. That's a true story. 3,000th podcast. We had a lot going on in the world. Forgot to be checking how many podcasts we've done. Yeah, we hit 3,000 2 weeks ago. So this is welcome to episode 3,020 of Rob is a Podcast. We got a good one. Good one for, you know what they say. You always want to have a good podcast for 3,020, where we're going to be talking with great Earl Cole will be our guest. I had been tracking down Earl Cole all season long. That at one point we were going to talk for the premiere, and then we had to change things up between that I had Tina also, and we couldn't figure out a way to make it all work. So we went back and forth a bunch of times, but this was a week that Earl was around. So excited to have Earl with us to talk about everything that's going on in Survivor 40, and maybe talk some Survivor Fiji as well. So looking forward to this one. We had a great podcast with the Purple Pants Badass. Bryce Isaiah was my guest on Thursday, and lots of fun catching up with Bryce. Very funny show. If you want to go ahead and make sure you catch that one. We're also going to have over the weekend, this week in Survivor, Matt LaGuardia will be our guest, and the Wiggle Room, not to mention the latest episode of Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast. So be on the lookout for all of that. Before we get to our podcast, I just want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are our friends over at BetterHelp. And BetterHelp is such a great service right now. They are providing something that people really could use. They are online professional counselors who are waiting to talk and help you out, because we're stuck at home. So many of us are feeling isolated, worried about so many things that may be very much out of our control. You can talk to a licensed online therapist and find relief. That's where BetterHelp comes in. Their therapists specialize in issues like depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, insomnia, family conflicts, and more. You can connect with your counselor in a safe and private online environment. Anything you share is confidential. It's really great. I've gotten the chance to check it out. You go ahead and you fill in all the information about yourself. You get matched up one-on-one with a counselor. You can decide whether you want to have a video call like I did, or you can talk with somebody over the phone, whatever is more convenient for you, especially when you are at a time when you cannot get to traditional means of therapy, that you could simply just fill out the questionnaire to help assess your needs and get matched with a counselor that you'll love in less than 24 hours. Additionally, you can exchange unlimited messages. If for any reason you're unhappy with your counselor, you can request a new one for no additional charge. You can get professional help when you want it, wherever you are. It's a truly affordable option as well, BetterHelp. You can get 10% off your first month with the discount code RHAP. So why not get started today? Get to BetterHelp.com/RHAP. That's BetterHelp.com/RHAP. Talk to a therapist online and get help. All right. I'm very excited to bring in our guest. I was hoping that we would get a chance to talk to him here during Survivor 40, The Winners at War. And it is a great pleasure to talk with the man who was the first person to go down to Fiji and come back with the win. Here he is, the original King of Fiji, the great Earl Cole. Earl, how are you?
Wow, I am doing great, Rob. I am so happy and excited to be a part of this podcast.
Yes.
Lots to talk about.
A lot to talk about, and really excited that you're here so we can talk about the Winners at War and everything that you're up to. But how's everything going on your end during all this craziness, Earl?
Well, I'm on lockdown like everyone else. So this is actually the first time in years I've been able to watch Survivor consistently now because I'm at home. So I can do that. And so I'm up to date. Everything is fresh in my mind. I just saw the last crazy tribal council. Mm-hmm. I've even got to watch more of the older seasons now. You know, just being a stay-at-home dad and working from home during this pandemic, you know, you discover many hidden talents. I think I learned that I can juggle pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm up to four objects. So I actually took practice for that.
Okay, so you're literally juggling, or you're like
literally juggling?
Yeah,
like I'm going to juggle. Like I don't know. I started it off. I'll say in my season, I think they cut it out where we were juggling coconuts.
Mm-hmm.
I made it up to three and I got pretty good. And, you know, one day I said, you know what? One day I'm going to do it like a real juggler, get up to like 7 or 8 just to have like party trick.
Yeah.
You know, but it's pretty challenging, but I made it up to 4. So that is what I'm doing with my time.
Yeah. That's very impressive. And, you know, juggling is good practice for trying to do everything that you're trying to do with being a dad and working at the same time, and not dropping any balls, in real life. But
that is true, sir.
Yeah, really excited to have you here with us. What's it been like to watch this season as somebody who is one of the winners who's not at war right now?
It's fun to watch from the couch. I enjoy it. I remember everything very clearly once when it all unfolds. Like, oh, wow, they're in my home turf.
Yeah.
Would I have like home field advantage if I was there?
Mm-hmm.
That I know the lay of the land pretty well. I know the weather pretty good. You know, the people of Fiji, probably not. I would be, you know, just like everybody else. I think it's kind of neutral, but it's interesting watching it as a winner. I'll say my perspective is I love everything. I love the new element of gameplay with the fire tokens. But one thing I really miss is I wish I would have had those moments to bond with all these other winners, because a lot of these people I have not met.
Mm-hmm.
Not met. Few winners, but say, oh man, such special moments and times to get to know these people, because you know winners were kind of in their own circle, you know, about, you know, what it was like to be out there and how you had to navigate to get to the end. So I do miss that element of it, doing that. And I don't think it's a, you know, best of the best type of thing. I've never felt that way about winning Survivor. I never feel there's any winner better than the other. And I've said this to you before, probably in the past, in other interviews. You know, it's a lot of luck involved with a Survivor as well as the strategy. Cause anything can happen. You can be second short of winning a particular challenge. And that challenge, you go to tribal council, you voted out just for some random reason. And that's the end of your time there. So, I just think the friendships and the camaraderie to be out there again. Even being recognized as obviously I'm one of the winners, but it just didn't work out for me. You know, it was bad timing, as it always is.
Yeah. Right. So,
I swear they changed the format to doing back-to-back seasons. I forgot, I don't know what year that was. That would be triggered for someone.
Yeah, I think it was probably around the time of Heroes versus Villains and Samoa.
Yeah. Yeah. Around that time, because when I originally did it, we shipped out in October.
Mm-hmm.
See, October works out great for me because my work schedule was clear starting in October. So I would easily be able to do Survivor second, third time if they were still doing it that format. But when they started doing it in May and June, like, oh, gosh, that's the time for me.
Yeah. Well, that's actually a good note to file in the back of our head as we're trying to wonder when Survivor might get back up and running, after the coronavirus is under control, hopefully sooner than later, where that I had been wondering, you know, well, what's the cutoff for when they can film a season in that part of the world where, you know, in terms of like the weather getting too extreme, there being a rainy season. So that, I think that's actually encouraging that they have shot a season in Fiji in October, where that from what I recall, it wasn't too terrible of a weather season when you guys played. I know, and you guys aren't in the same exact part of Fiji that they're in for these seasons, right?
Yeah, it's not the same exact area. I think it might be a challenge or two. That might be one of the similar islands, since it's already been vetted.
Yeah,
I think October would work. There is a downside, because I don't know how the weather is there during the time, but at night it would be freezing.
Yeah.
In Fiji. And it actually rained a couple of times. I actually had a big monsoon when I was stuck on Exile Island.
Yeah.
One night.
I remember.
Did they show that? I thought they cut it all out.
I thought that was somewhere in my sense memory.
Oh gosh. It was such a nightmare. I was there alone. I don't mind the solitude, but I didn't have, there was no camp. I was just basically sleeping in this tower thing to be away from the snakes, and it was just pouring and pouring and pouring. And I remember the a producer came in his raincoat, you know, climbed up the ladder to the little tower that had no walls. And I was freezing. And he said, "So how do you like Survivor?" And this was like day 30 or something. He said, "Would you say this makes you the ultimate survivor?" I said, "If I can get through this, I can get through anything." And I thought that they would keep that on the show, but they didn't. No one knows what I had to go through when I was on Exile Island. It was horrible that day.
Yeah. You spent a lot of time at Exile Island, a.k.a. Earl Island. Do you feel like that there's any sort of comparison between being alone and on a place like Exile Island and the people that are on the edge of extinction?
I think it's a big difference. I think Natalie first experienced you know, the true experience of an Exile Island when she was there by herself. It's definitely different when you have more people.
Yeah.
I mean, because part of the what was supposed to be a downside to being on Exile Island is you were by yourself and you're out of the game. So you had to fend for yourself. For me, that was actually easier because I only had to feed myself and I didn't have to chat it up with anybody and just, you know, I was alone in my own thoughts and things like that. So now they're still plotting against each other, even if they're doing it in a subtle way. But everybody's figuring out, what can I do to get back in the game? When is that moment going to happen when I have to take one of these people out to get back in? So it's all fun and dandy. Even, you know, when everybody helped Ethan with the logs and I thought that was a great moment. Love that. I even love the fact when Parvati and I forgot who the other person was when they found the tokens to get the peanut butter for everybody.
Yeah, with Danny.
Yeah, you know, those moments can happen in an edge of extinction as opposed to just Exile Island, to where, you know, it was just me and whoever else would go to Exile Island. You just had to fend for yourself.
Yeah, you talked about the camaraderie between the winners. Are the winners, like, before all this, Earl, were the winners a tight-knit group? For somebody who's not a winner, I imagine that you guys were all on, like, text chains and just talking about how stupid everybody else is who's not a winner, having breakfast and smoking cigars all together.
There's no secret Facebook group called Winners.
Yeah.
Survivor Winners. No one knows what. No, there's nothing like that. I think everybody was just proud of their season. And, you know, when you win, you understand that there is luck involved. I mean, people know each other. You see, I'll say one of the factors that played into this season was the previous relationships.
Yeah.
You know, the thing, it really wasn't an old school and new school. It really wasn't that. It was just, you know, the time that I won, you know, just like everybody now, like from season, I'll say 30 and up, you do all the charity events. So they're not new to what we did, all this stuff back in our day. So you know each other, you see each other all the time for a good 5 years of that stuff. And so you're kind of still friends. And then you kind of fall off and people start having kids, like myself, you get married. And your priorities shift, as opposed to like when I won, I was single and all that stuff. And that's what a lot of the new school people, as you see in the family thing, where they're not married with kids and things like that. So their focus is a bit different. And they all kind of still know each other because they're doing the whole rounds of all the charity things, where people are like Yule and Ethan are far removed from Survivor. Like they played 13 years ago and longer. And so it's just they don't have the same relationships. And so I think all of that played into the dynamics of this season, which that made it challenging, not because of the pace of the game, as people keep referring to, like, oh, it's a faster pace. No, it's just those relationships aren't there.
So do you think that you would have been at a similar disadvantage, like a Yule who played one season before you, where that you just weren't as connected as a lot of these other people were who played in more of the recent seasons?
Nope, I stayed connected.
Yeah, okay, good.
I stayed on social media. Yule wasn't on social media very much.
He was social media. He was working. He was working at Facebook.
Yeah, maybe he was not literally working at Facebook.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think Ethan was doing like some hosting things and all of that. And, but that's the thing, that the more time goes by, the priority of Survivor starts going further and further down in your life, as opposed to when you just recently won in the last 5 years.
Right.
You're really involved with so many things. You're still kind of involved with CBS. you're just doing all these things as opposed to, you know, someone that wins in 2003, 2005. Like, oh my gosh, like that was like four kids ago. For like a Boston Rob, even though he's been there many times.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think those kind of things have a factor. But, you know, it's just like, I always try to use a basketball analogy. Like, it's like the Michael Jordan era, he was a winner. And the LeBron James era, he's a winner.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think Michael Jordan could play in this era and still be Michael Jordan? Of course he could. He would just adapt to the easier rules. Mm-hmm. They have now.
Oh, he'd be more dominant.
And be more dominant. Think of how hard Survivor was when you and I played.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely a lot harder because it wasn't much data to reference as now. And now you have like 39, 40 seasons to reference on strategy, play like this person and see this.
Yeah.
Where you didn't have that much to work with before. It was still kind of wild, wild west of strategies.
Yeah. So, Earl, who are some of the people, if you don't mind saying, that you would have been excited to work with on a season like this from the people that were out there? If we were trying to like mentally paint the picture, like which alliances do you think you would have been a good fit for?
Well, the political answer for that is
all of them.
Yeah. I love every winner out there. I would work with anybody there. And that's the story I'm sticking to because you never know when I might be back again.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think people might categorize me without me knowing. They might have put me in this old school group type of thing just because. And knowing that I would have knew that going in that the numbers didn't balance out right. And I just know how people think and how human behavior works, especially with all winners where you would think people don't have as many flaws as a regular season.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, what reason would they find to get rid of player number one, player number two? How are they going to get rid of it? So they're going to do these imaginary things like, okay, we're going to say they're us versus them. They're old school. We're new school. Like it just kind of naturally happened that way because some players are just older.
Mm-hmm. So in the lead up to this season with all the winners coming back, did you start getting any phone calls or like messages from people that you hadn't heard from who were all of a sudden? Yes. Yes.
That's pretty much every season.
Yes.
You start the phone calls, but especially when I get, you know, the invite or something like it just words gets around pretty quickly and everybody has people's cell phone numbers. I won't say who called me or what.
Yeah.
But yes, I got the call and people try to form these early alliances that never work. But mm-hmm. they tried it. You know, the people that had the advantage for that would be Rob and Amber because they actually live together, so they can really map out their plan. But how did that even work out? You know, it doesn't even matter. You know.
Well, I don't think they really talked to anybody. I think that was an issue where Rob was going to go beyond the show with Sandra and then didn't even tell Sandra that he was going to come back with. I think in hindsight, that was a mistake.
Yeah, that's all strategy. And you have to know what type of person Sandra is. You know, she likes the upfront honesty type of thing. So it would have been to his advantage to say like, hey, I got the call too. You know, I just spent, you know, all this time with you. Hey, maybe we can form an alliance or at least entertain that with her as opposed to keeping a secret. Mm-hmm. Thinking that will work. You know, it's like you're dealing with all winners now. You're not dealing with regular Joe Schmo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, that makes for a more fun season. I think this is just my own speculation on why Jeff never wanted an all winners. Because to win Survivor, you have to have a certain temperament, a certain balance. And you don't get the craziness as opposed to just some random player
right.
on the left, random player for the right. So I think they were trying to avoid a certain situation to where everybody's calculating, everybody's a certain kind of player where it's not as fun with the content. So I felt like having that extra gameplay of the fire tokens was brilliant. And this is something I brought up to them when I first won, like, hey, you guys need to up the ante a little bit on this gameplay because it's very simple and it's starting to become more of a social game only as opposed to strategy. I love the strategy of the fire tokens. Like I think it's fantastic. And I even have other ideas I would love for them to add now that I see how this is all playing out.
Okay, well, tell me, Earl, what is it that you like so much about the fire tokens from what you've seen?
Well, it gives you an extra element of strategy.
Yeah.
You know, the idols was one thing that was introduced. And they played around with it. You know, I think the first season they did was the Cook Islands, the idol.
So it popped up very briefly in Guatemala. And then there was like the superpowered idol. And then you guys were the first ones. You had the normal idol.
Yeah. Yeah. Our season was the first time when it was how it is now.
Yeah.
Previously, the Cook Islands is when it was like a god idol. It's like, yeah. It was so powerful. Like, you know, it was after the votes you can play it. Like,
yeah.
Totally unfair to where it became a guessing game our season. And they've pretty much stuck to that where you play the idol. What is it? Right after the votes?
Yeah. Yeah. After the votes are cast.
Yeah. Before the votes are read.
Yeah.
So it definitely adds that. So the fire tokens are similar. To that, because when you, it's almost like winning Survivor every tribal conflict. Not only do you vote, if you are orchestrating voting someone out for a tribal council, you have to do it in a way to where you're nice enough to where they want to give you their fire tokens too. Mm-hmm. So it's like winning Survivor. It's like you voted them out, but nice enough to where they will still want to give you the $1 million.
Okay.
So that's an extra element that I love. And just all the different advantages and all, because Survivor is very simple. It's a very simple game. So you need these advantages, nullifiers, all these things were talked about years ago, and they're finally coming to fruition, which I love.
So I think that's interesting that you are a big proponent of all the advantages, because I feel like that most of the, you know, people that played in the older seasons that I talked to feel like enough of these advantages. Back when we played, we didn't need these advantages.
No, you don't need it. But, you know, I love gameplay.
Yeah.
And I always said the Survivor was simple, but the people are complicated. Mm-hmm. But it's been on long enough now to where you know, like, just be super social, mm-hmm. and you do well. And it's unfair to be on something like an all winter season to where somebody can pick and choose, like, all right, we're just going to vote out so-and-so just because, and then they're just gone just like that. Give them a chance to save themselves.
To mix it up.
Play a little harder. And plus, it's for $2 million. It's not going to be a regular Survivor. You know, no one's going to make those stupid mistakes like, you know, people normally do on Survivor, like coming in trying to dominate right away. Like, no, everybody's very calculating on how they do things, very methodical, because mm-hmm. they're all winners. So you need that extra element of gameplay, and it makes it more fun. You know, like having that idol nullifier or Jeremy able to walk away.
Yeah.
The powerless vote. Like, all that stuff is great because everybody better be good at math. I tell you, when you go on Survivor now, understand the numbers.
Yeah.
What might happen? So
okay.
I love it.
So, Earl, help me make sense of this last tribal council, because now we had a lot of stuff going on. We had Jeremy playing his safety without power. We had an idol. We had a vote steal. And it ended up in a pretty wild tribal council with a ton of whispering going on. And I was left after the episode being like, I don't really understand how this broke down this way.
Well, I am definitely not a champion for the whispering during tribal. I don't like that. It's just sloppy. It just looks sloppy. Mm-hmm. It just gets all over the place. I don't know if fans find it entertaining. I mean, do you find it entertaining seeing that?
I think that I'm with most people that I've talked to about this, where when it first started happening, it was exciting because it's like, oh, this is unprecedented. But now it happens so much that you know, we like to know a little bit more of what's going on. And it's just, you know, confusing to the point where now we watched the whole show and we have no idea what just happened.
Yeah, it throws off your guesses. Like, okay, you get to watch everybody scramble, you know, at camp, and you can try to figure out, okay, so these are the three choices that might happen. And then bam, it's choice number four. You didn't know it's a blindside. Ha! But now it's like, all right, things, you have choice A, B, and C. And next thing you know, like, wait a minute. You mean it's choice one, two, and three? I thought we were doing A, B, and C. Like, and you don't know what's going on as in the audience. And so I don't like that. my solution is that I say, like, you know what would be interesting is if there was a way to challenge someone else during tribal council.
Okay.
Like, if you think you're one of the people that's going to go home, maybe like Adam, like he might say, okay, it's almost like being in the final tribal. You know how you kind of like speak for yours, you know, mm-hmm. you give your final jury speech. Maybe you do that every tribal council. If it comes down to two people, you can be right or you can be wrong. You're exposing, like, you're putting someone else on Front Street on blast. Like, I challenge this person to stand with me right now. And if I can convince people to change their vote now, I mean, I haven't fully thought it out, but I think that could be a solution to all this whispering mm-hmm. for and the clamoring for things. You know, I'm going to think about it some more.
Okay.
I'll be back to that one.
Yeah, well, I would love to get your ideas, because it really is frustrating where to the point where not only do we have whispering, that we had like five people stand up and say, hey, we're just going to go over there and talk it through and try to, you know, then we'll come back and come up with a new plan. And I feel like that we should get to see everything that's going on.
Yeah, it becomes just disrespectful at that point. Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty, like, wow. Us five are just going to go over here and talk about it. And the audience still doesn't know what's going on. Now, if they mic'd up everybody individually, I don't remember. Did they used to mic us all up?
Yeah, I think everybody is mic'd up, but I think that maybe that they're whispering so quietly. I'm not sure if we can hear it, or if they, you know, could turn it up and to the point where we could hear it. Maybe they don't want us to know exactly what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're experimenting.
Yeah.
I guess they'll figure it out. I'm not a big fan of it, but, you know, it's like what Jeremy was saying. It's just so much chaos mm-hmm. that happens, and you just don't know. You know, the previous tribal council, I think that's the Adam one.
Yeah.
You know, it was hilarious, some of the things, but emotional roller coaster. You didn't even know what was what, and no one was hearing anything. And then, you know, the vote happens, and I think fans are left with like, well, that didn't feel great. I don't even, you know, no one wants to feel that way. You want to have your guesses and go from there.
Earl, did you feel that at all it was similar at this tribal council where with these two sides going after each other at like a similar point in the game to when the four horsemen were together and you guys were trying to suss out, you know, where the idol was going to be played and who was going to get the idol used on them when Edgardo got voted out?
Yeah. Well, all of that happened, you know, at camp, trying to figure things out as far as that particular vote. And it's too dangerous to change it up last minute. I think now how Survivor's played, no one's committed to anyone. Like, I don't even think any alliances go too far. You know, mm-hmm. you jump alliances like it's just so easy now. But, you know, like the old school stuff, which I think some of the players were saying, like, you know, you stay faithful to your alliance. You know, you guys do it all together and you make it to the end. It's nothing like that now. You know, from day one, people are switching alliances and everybody's a double agent. You know, you used to have one or two, but now it's just part of Survivor. You have to be a double agent. You have to play a social game. It doesn't even matter if you win immunity or not. You know, if you win immunity, you're gone next. It's just so many things that happen now that it's hard to keep up, but you know, that's just how it is.
So in this episode, that I really am unclear on where Michelle came down in all of this, where that we heard at one point that she was part of this group of five that was going to be voting against the other group of five. It turns out that she did cast her vote for Tyson, even though she was in confessional. We heard she's part of the five. She wasn't included in the five when Sophie said, hey, let's us five go decide. But still, she votes for Tyson. Do you think that Michelle might have been playing double agent with that group, with Jeremy and with Tyson and with Kim and Denise?
Yeah, I think Michelle is definitely playing a double agent. I think she's playing a good game. It's, you know, I hate saying the whole under the radar thing because mm-hmm. I don't know what it's like. You know, we only go by the editing, but I think she is playing a very interesting game. Even with the whole previous relationship with Wendell thing and the way that was kind of playing out, Was it already orchestrated that way between Wendell and her? I mean, who knows? But I feel like she had the advantage in that whole thing. And I think she's just playing it. I think she's playing down what she's doing. And yeah, she's one of my sleepers to make it to the end. I think Michelle is playing that kind of game, and no one's really targeting her. And that's how people make it to the end. You know, no one's paying any attention to her.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think she's definitely being a double agent in some kind of way.
And I don't think it's a slight to say that she's playing under the radar. I don't think that anybody is even cast votes against her, if I'm remembering things correctly. So I think that that's, she's doing a very good job of being a part of these things, but not getting any blood on her hands in the same way that, she accumulated 4 fire tokens was because that people were going out of the game feeling good about her. And like you're saying, that's also the same skill set that you need to win the game.
Yeah. And I know she talks about how she feels like she has to prove herself from when she won the first time. I think the way she won the first time is what's giving her an advantage now, because she's not this, upper tier, I'll say, winner that, all this attention, like, oh, they've just dominated their season. Like, that helps her in this season, to where she didn't dominate like that. Like, she might have just squeaked by in her win and people felt like that. And so I think that is helping her. So she better be happy. She got the money. And so you might not have got the credit, but you got the money. And now you can use that, that you felt was a disadvantage as your advantage in this new season. And hey, you might walk away with another $2 million.
So going back to Jeremy using that advantage, the safety without power at that tribal council. So he gets out of there. He lives to see another day in the game. How do you think that Jeremy is going to be received back at camp from both the people that were in his alliance and the people that were potentially targeting him in the first place?
That's a tough one. I understand him playing it because, looking at the numbers, and if you might have caught any whisper about a blind side for him because he felt vulnerable. And that's pretty much the only advantage he has was that one.
Yeah.
So when do you play that? You don't want to be an idiot and not play it.
And it was the last night he could play it also.
Yeah. And that's how he can state his case to everyone else. This is the last night I could play it. And now they might be like, but we had your back and you took away one of the votes and now so-and-so went home. He's actually okay that Tyson went home. I think more people would be okay with Tyson going home as opposed to somebody else in his alliance.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that his allies will, be, excited to continue to work with him, or they don't have another option?
Who all is in his alliance?
Well, I think it was Kim and Denise. I think that that's basically it.
Well, the way Denise plays, I can see her not being happy with Jeremy.
Yeah.
So I can definitely see her not being happy. I mean, I always try to put myself in other people's position. Okay. If I'm Denise, if I'm this player, how would I view everything? How would I view the game? That's how I like to play. Think about how other people think. Try to use their strategies. So I think, Denise definitely won't be happy. Kim was still just kind of navigating. I don't think she would say too much, but Denise is kind of like right on it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think Jeremy should be worried, from that play, but I understand him having to play it. Sometimes you're just stuck between a rock and a hard place, and he didn't have a choice but to do that.
So whose position do you like the most on the other side of things, the group that came away from that tribal council after voting out Tyson?
I like Sophie's position, and I like Tony's position.
Yeah.
I like where Tony is. Tony, I think, has been playing a good game because, he's learned from his past mistakes. This is his third time playing. He knows what works and what doesn't work. Like, he learned to dial it down a bit. And, he likes to play this role of like, oh, I'm just sloppy and I just do everything. I'm impatient. Like, I don't agree with that. I think that's just all fluff in the way. I think everything he's doing is definitely methodical and he's thinking about it. He even plays the buffoon sometimes on purpose. And that's how you have to play the game. You have to do certain things. You got to, however the perceptions of reality, play into those perceptions to take the target off your back, you know, and I think he's doing that skillfully. So, you know, and the editing is showing that too. I was like, he has an interesting edit. So, you know, another one of my picks, you know, he could do pretty well.
Yeah. Earl, was there anybody that you saw in Fiji when you played that you noticed that this was a person who was playing up the buffoon on purpose to try to, you know, manipulate how people perceive them?
Yes. Boo.
Boo.
Yes.
Because it's interesting because that you bring up Boo, you know, in relation to Tony, where in going back and brushing up on some Fiji, Boo was making a spy shack years before Tony ever came on the show.
Oh, yeah. This is it's funny. Like people that haven't been watching Survivor the whole 20 years, which I understand if you haven't, you know, a lot of these things aren't new that are happening, you know. It's happened before. And I think another interview I'd done, and somebody talked about, you know, the meat shield. I was like, oh my God, like we used that so long ago. Mm-hmm. That's just like normal Survivor. Like you can coin a term, you can call it something, but it's been done before. The fake idols been done before. All of that stuff. Like it's just how you use it to your advantage during your season is what works. And so, yeah, he had did a spy shack back way back then. It was funny. And now Tony saw it and borrowed that, or he might have came up with it his own.
Yeah.
You don't know, but you know, it makes for great content.
Did you guys know that Boo had a spy shack in Fiji, or was it something that you didn't find out about till you watched the show?
I didn't know about it because I don't think I was on his tribe then when mm-hmm. he was doing it.
I think it comes up late in the season that they show around the time that he's going to get voted out. They show us Boo is like Boo is working on building the spy shack. He's going to hide by the well, but you guys are just nowhere near him and talking about voting him out.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's great. I mean, people do a lot of innovative things that usually a lot of times don't even make the show, you know, because you can only cram so much in, you know, 45 minutes of airplane. You know, that's something that made it, and I thought it was great. It's fun content, and, you know, I love it. I love all the interesting things about Survivor and the different characters.
Mm-hmm. So this week we got to see this loved ones visit where we got to see all of the family come out. Interestingly, for whatever reason, you guys didn't have a family visit in Fiji, correct?
There is a reason.
Oh,
yeah, there's a clear reason.
Yes.
It's very hurtful when I even see the loved ones, especially something like this, you know, because we were robbed of that opportunity. That was something I was always looking forward to. You know, even though I wasn't familiar with Survivor, but people, you know, that I was playing with knew it well. And they said, like, you make it to a certain level, loved ones come to visit you. And I said, oh, great, great. To, you know, because I remember doing the paperwork. My mother was going to be my visitor.
Yeah.
Because I was single at the time with no kids. And, I wanted my mom because my mom had never been out of the country. And so this has been our first time ever to go all this way and to see what I'm doing because I was playing for her. And then I remember there just being this break for a couple of days where we didn't do anything and no one knew what was going on. And somebody said, I think our loved ones are coming in. And they never did. We just kept playing the game. And then one of the producers came and told us the reason why, you know, you didn't have a loved one visit because there's a military coup going on in Fiji right now.
Oh.
So there was no planes going in and out. There were soldiers about and AK-47s and all kind of things like that was taking place. So it was just one of those random things that I worked so hard to get to a certain level. And I think this was top 5 or 6 for us at that point.
Yeah.
And that was taken away. So I never got the experience what it would be like to have your loved one come visit.
Yeah. So I knew about the coup. I didn't know that that was the reason why you guys didn't have the loved ones, because you guys are the only season like in that whole block that doesn't have one. You know, they have it pretty much around the same time every single season. And just thinking back with it being the loved ones week and getting ready to talk about it, yeah, that's weird they didn't have one in Fiji.
Yeah, it really sucked that, you know, that was the one time I played Survivor and that happened.
Yeah.
And it's just unfortunate. So every time I see the loved ones episode, I was like, oh gosh, it's just always a shame because, you know, my mother has passed away since then. And so I said, gosh, I could never give her that. You know, yeah. That was one thing I wanted her to experience.
Now, when you won the show, though, didn't you give half the money to your mom?
You did your homework.
Yes, wow. Yes.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't catch that. I offered it to her.
Yes.
And she didn't want it, but I still just paid off everything, the house. I did all that. I just took care of her completely and, you know, offered her to take her anywhere in the world, Paris, whatever. And she chose to go to Albuquerque, New Mexico. Because of grandma. This is a true story. So you can go anywhere in the world. Like, where do you want to go? You want to go to Italy? You want to go to, you know, South Africa, do a safari? She said, no, I just want to go to Albuquerque and visit your grandma.
Yeah.
Said, okay. First class?
Yeah.
It's like, nope, just regular old flight.
Yeah.
That's a testament of my mother, and that's why I played the way I did. My mother was a very dignified woman, you know, just great integrity, always gave back to charities and just did so much, you know. So that's why I try to live my life that way, too. And that was just a testament on how she is as a person. She never cared about the money or anything like that. You know, she just wanted to see me happy and make sure I didn't curse on TV or anything like that.
Yeah.
And made family look good. And she was very proud and happy. And, you know, that made me happy that she was proud of how I played the game.
Was she a fan of the show before you went on it?
No.
Okay.
My mother was watching things like, what's that show called? Gosh, what is that? I wish I could remember. It's such a random show. She was watching The Good Wife.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It was shows like that. You know, she would watch things like that. She didn't watch Survivor. I mean, she watched obviously my season. I think a lot of people watch the following season to see like what is it like for someone else? And then it kind of tapers off. If you're not a fan of the show, like,
yeah,
you know, it's hard to recruit fans.
Mm-hmm. So, Earl, what would it have been like for you to have been at this point in the game and then to have your entire family, you know, your wife and kids all be coming out there on the beach? Do you think that would take you out of the headspace that you need to be in the game?
That is a very good question. I've ran that scenario in my head many times. Like, gosh, that would be tough, you know, because I don't know what it's like.
Yeah.
I would try to mentally say, I'm going to be all right. I'm going to be strong. And then I could see my 2-year-old coming out saying, daddy. It's like, oh, jeez, there goes my game. There goes me being like a hardcore warrior. Now I'm just a soft little piece of jello.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have loved it. It would have been refreshing because obviously at this point you're playing for your family as opposed to just playing for yourself.
Yeah.
So, I think it's more of a motivator as opposed to a distraction. I think it would rejuvenize me and, you know, not that I would ever lose any of the juice anyway, but you just even more focused, like, you know, I gotta do this, you know, and I commend CBS for giving that family visit to everyone and not only just one person as it normally is, but their entire family. So to see my wife and both kids, oh man.
Yeah.
That would have been a dream. But it would have been, oh man, I would have been a mess.
Well, what I thought was wild was that we actually saw the gameplay get a lot crazier after that, where, you know, that there was a lot of chatter going on, but everybody was sort of like, okay, should it be Adam or should it be Nick? And they're sort of like just trying to pick out like which person at the bottom to vote off. And I do think that a lot of times we see the Survivor players say, okay, let's just get to the family visit. You know, that's our deal. We'll go to the family visit. And I wonder, if you have this big alliance so that I've been calling them a voting blob of basically 8 people. And most of them, with the exception of Sophie, were all people who were married, have kids, and they had to have all known, okay, our kids are coming out here. There's no way they could pull that off without the Survivor players all like knowing about it. And I wonder how many of them were sort of like, okay, let's just play it safe here in the merge until we get to the loved ones visit. And I think Survivor did a good thing by having the loved ones visit so early. Now at 10, okay, now all of a sudden, that's where we got so many fireworks happening. This week, where I think everybody was playing kind of conservative at the start of the merge.
I think that's a great insight. I agree with you. It definitely got a little crazier, and that could be some of the editing as well. But I would not be surprised if there ended up being a divide between the people with kids and the people without kids.
Mm-hmm.
People with kids, I think there's outnumber the others. I think, if I recall, is it?
Yeah. So it's only Sophie and Michelle and Nick that don't have children, and then the other seven people that were in the game this week, they all have kids.
Okay, my guess is that you said Sophie and Nick is that they won't make it to the end. Then I can see people with families thinking that their win is more important than single people. And I understand. I totally get it.
Yeah.
You know, you're playing for your family as opposed to somebody playing, okay, you got some money, you get to go on vacation and go travel or whatever. So I can see there being a divide and using that as strategy. Like, so-and-so doesn't have kids and this person does. So let's vote out the single person. Or it could be the opposite.
Yeah.
You want to people that don't have the kids to the end so you can play your kids card in the final tribal council.
Yeah.
I'm playing for my family.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Yeah.
I think that did help out Jeremy in the first time that he played. Not to say that people voted for him because that he said that they were going to be having another baby, but up against Spencer, who was a young kid, and then also against Tasha, who was single, didn't have a family. I think that the jury does want to reward the person who has a family.
There is definitely an emotional element to voting for the winner. That's why what you say in tribal council is a critical skill you must have. You know, you have to, I mean, you have to act like you are a trial lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you say is being jotted down and analyzed in every way. So it was smart for him to do that. You have to play that card, whatever it takes to get the money.
Yeah. Is there a way for some of these single people to be able to turn this around? Because I think back to in your season in Fiji, where you were up against Dreams in the final three. And I think that you definitely could have looked at the season and said, hey, okay, Dreams is somebody who they said he was homeless and he came from, he didn't have anything going on. And this was talked about who needs the money more? And you were actually, you pushed back against that and said it wasn't necessarily about, you know, it's $1 million. Everybody needs $1 million, and it shouldn't go to the person who necessarily needs the money more. You know, you need to get it back focused onto who played the best game.
Wow, you remember all of that? That's great. And I stick to that, and that is what I needed to say. But that's how I actually felt. You know, it should not be based on a certain fact. Like, it could be how did someone play the game and get to the end. I think Dream played a great game as well, but I said, did he play how I played it? No. And so you use whatever you can to your advantage. And just like Jeremy's win, he used his family I think that's happened many times. That would be a good analysis to see how many times has a family person beat the single person in the final tribal council.
Let me ask you a couple other questions from the listeners. Ron from Toronto wants to know, Earl, who do you still keep in touch with from your season?
These are pretty much the standard questions.
Yes. But yes.
I keep in touch with, you know, most people that are on Facebook. I think that's how everyone stays in touch.
Mm-hmm.
I see Yao Man every now and then when I go up north. You know, we might have a beer together or something like that when I go up to the Bay Area. I see Anthony every now and then because he has kids. I have kids.
Yes.
So I invite into my kid's birthday party. So I've seen him. I've seen Rocky a couple of times.
Yeah.
Because he was a bartender in Hollywood and I was out a couple of times throughout the years and ran into him. Same with Liliana on my season. I've seen her out before. Alex.
Yeah. What does Liliana do?
Pardon?
What does Liliana do? Just, you just seen her places?
Yeah, I would just see her like out somewhere. Like, you know, we were all still young, so we were all going out. So I would see her times, but I would see Alex. I actually saw Alex at a wedding,
which
was random one day, and so it was good. And Rita from my season, I actually went to her wedding out here in California. Other people I haven't seen. I saw Dreams one time at an event. That was the only one time I've seen him since the season. I haven't run into Boo or what's the other person, Lily, on our season. I haven't seen, what's the architect?
Sylvia.
I haven't seen Sylvia. I mean, it's so many people because people are from all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I'm not going to Kentucky or, you know, Montana where some people like live, so I'm not going to see them. But Facebook definitely is how everyone stays in touch, or Instagram.
Yes. Let's see. This is a question. I'm sure you get this, some version of this all the time. Matt Gillen wants to know, which Winter at War would Earl most like to see do the Mecke?
That I would want them to do the Mecke?
Yeah, who do you want to see do the Mecke?
I would like to see a girl do the Mecke.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's used to the clip of me doing it and all of that. You know what? Who could do it? I would say it'd be nice to see Denise do it.
Okay.
I think that could be interesting to have a mom do the dance.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could be fun.
That should have been the loved ones challenge. It's like, how badly do you want to see your family do the Mecke?
They actually should have had a challenge, you know, like a fun challenge, not a real competitive, like, hey, maybe we can have a dance off or a juggling contest,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
Just something fun, just so everybody can just kind of be around each other. But food is also good too, so they have a nice feast.
So the Mecke challenge, it's, you know, such a memorable thing because it's the only time that they ever did it. Do you hope that they bring it back, or do you feel like that they shouldn't bring it back because it's special because they only did it one time?
No, bring it back. Why not? And let me be a judge.
Yes. You could come out and be the special judge. I mean, they're in Fiji, right?
Exactly. That would be the most amazing. I would be like a reward. Like they do the whole Mecke because we were dancing for food basically in front of the judges. And I'll come out like, hey, we have a special guest judge, you know, Earl, the original winner of Survivor Fiji. Wow. I'd be the Russian judge. I'd be so hard and critical though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be like when they brought Cochran in off the boat to give advice that you
my
can...
idea, by the way.
That was your idea?
It's so many things. Yeah, I think I was already working in entertainment before I got on the show. You know, I worked in advertising, I worked at Disney, I've done all these things. So when I played, you know, I knew some of the producers, I would give them ideas like, hey, you should have time. I talked about advantages for the idol and disadvantages. I told them about you should have survivors come back and be coaches. I said, that'd be great. I said, you should have a winner give advice as a reward and all that. They thought I was crazy when I said it, but I didn't know they were actually listening because those same producers are still there. So I'm glad that some of those little seeds that I dropped many, many years ago have actually come to fruition and actually came true, especially Island of Idols. Oh my God.
You're taking credit for it.
I will stand by that. I dare any producer to come and say, well, they knew me personally then, that I did not say these things.
Mm-hmm. Did you say there should be statues, Earl?
No. No, I did not. That was CBS came up with that on their own. I did not say statues.
Yeah. Earl, what do you think survivors should do when they get back and up and running? How do you follow up Winners at War?
A regular season. I think you should just listen to the fans. I think a lot of fans want to see just a whole fresh crop of players. I say keep the same element of the fire tokens moving forward, but have just a fresh batch of players.
Mm-hmm.
Keep all the advantages and disadvantages. Let it be a new thing, a new way to play Survivor. I think this was a good mark at, you know, year 20, season 40 of the evolution of Survivor moving forward. This is why I thought Richard Hatch would have been a good addition to this cast.
Yeah.
I think his, confessionals could have been interesting if he could compare season 1 to season 40. Having that narrative, like, yeah, well, you know, when I was on season one, we didn't have a clue about this, and it's nice to see how it evolved to this.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been great to put all the glue together with him.
The problem with, you know, there's a couple of problems, but one of the problems with Richard is that he will tell you, I'm out here doing this. These people are just figuring this out now. This is the stuff I knew in season 1.
Hey, that's great. Yeah,
he's gonna tell you he knew everything in the first season, and everybody else is just getting to it now.
Yeah, and then he gets voted out first.
So he's
EVP can happen, but he would have been an interesting, you know, symbolic player to be on there. And even if he was just a reward, like, I still think, you know, because I know CBS is big on just bringing players back because they might be popular or whatever the case. But I think a way to get a lot more people back is just have them be part of rewards, even favorite players, or can join in for a challenge. Like, this is just the new Survivor. I think having people play four or five times is just kind of ridiculous. I think it takes away from true fans to really get on the show, people that apply 10 times.
Yeah.
You know, give them a chance.
This is a good point, because we see Big Brother. I don't know if you follow the Big Brother at all, but they do that a lot. They have a Big Brother person come in and host the competition and stuff like that. Now, Julie Chen doesn't host the competition, so I think that maybe it's a little bit at odds with, like, Jeff hosting the competition to bring back, you know, past contestants in that capacity. But I think it's a really good idea where then, instead of maybe bringing all these people back over and over again, you give people a reason to tune in. And so I like this.
Yeah. Okay. Survivor producers, I hope you guys are listening to this.
Yeah. Earl, I know you're on a tight schedule. Is there anything else about Survivor 40 that you want to make sure that we touch on?
Survivor 40? Nothing. I think it's been great so far. It's been entertaining. It's been fun. I think it's going to get even crazier. The closer you get to that $2 million, the more people will jump ship and turn on their alliances. I think it's going to get really, really crazy. I don't know who's getting back into the game. My guess is Natalie, based on the editing. I watch things very closely. So that she might get back in. I think the problem with anybody coming back in from Edge of Extinction is I don't see anybody voting for them, because you just didn't play Survivor long enough. For me to give you the money. So, but you know, that's their job, is to convince you when you're out there.
Yeah.
So I think everybody should just love this season and look forward to another 10 seasons. Hopefully there'll be a time where I can come back and the timing is good. I'm hoping there might be a USA versus Australia theme one day.
Whoa.
I think that would be kind of interesting, especially with the popularity of Australia Survivor right now. Could be interesting. You know, why not?
Yeah.
USA versus Australia, or USA versus the world.
Yeah, I don't know if Russell made the best impression for the USA players when he went down to Australian Survivor, but...
Well, it's Survivor champs, and so he was already, you know, shouldn't have been included anyway. But, you know, they were actually getting on there. So that was great.
Earl, I want to also just mention that you raise a lot of money with your charity organization every year and all the time with the Perth's Kids Foundation. Could you just talk about that a little bit?
Sure. It's one of the organizations I started after Survivor. It gave me the time and the money to actually do something good and give back. It's called Perthes disease.
Perthes, I apologize.
Yeah. Oh, everybody always say it's called Perthes disease. It's a rare bone disease that affects children. I actually had the disease when I was a kid, which made me who I am today, because, you know, I was used to, you know, the solitude and having to figure things out and adapt to society in a certain way. So I always tell people that I credit my experience being in a wheelchair and going through all that with this particular hip bone disease to my gameplay on Survivor and becoming the person that I am. So this is the charity called Perthes Kids Foundation that I founded back in the same year that I won. So if you want to learn more about it, it's PerthesKids.org, which is P as in Paul, E-R-T-H-E-S kids.org. Feel free to give a donation. It is helping kids all over the world, because we are a global organization and we just keep growing and growing and growing. So I love it. It's something that's close to my heart and my way of giving back.
Well, Earl, thank you for making some time to spend with us today. I know you got a lot of stuff going on between work and your kids. So that's really appreciated that you had some time to talk about Survivor today.
Wait, you want to hear something?
Yeah.
Now I'm opening the office door.
Yeah. Yeah.
Background is
Earl, I could hear it before you opened the door.
Yeah, so So shout out to the fans. I am doing this for you.
Yes. No, we appreciate it. As somebody who often has the crying kids at my house, I get it. And I really appreciate you making the time to talk and also not losing your cool.
Yes.
But what else should we expect when you talk to Earl Cole?
Hey, that's right. I always keep it cool. Keep it calm.
This is your poker face.
That's right. Ah, very good. Well, Rob, it has definitely been a pleasure, and I am so glad I got a chance to speak with you. Yeah. And let's not let this be the last time.
Okay, you got any time, Earl. Okay, thanks so much.
Okay, have a good one.
Everybody, there you have it. The great Earl Cole here on the podcast. Really appreciate Earl making some time. Understand he's got some time constraints. Sounds like a lot going on there with the babies and everything that he has on his end. So I really do appreciate that we were able to work this out to get some time in with Earl today. We still have a lot coming up your way here talking Survivor. We are going to have this week in Survivor. Matt Liguori is going to be our guest this weekend. We're going to have the Wiggle Room still to come with Josh Wiggler and this week's Wand Off. Be on the lookout for that. Plus, Robin Akiva need a podcast. We're also going to have some special coverage coming your way about the new Netflix series, Too Hot to Handle. So be on the lookout for that as well. Again, thank you so much for listening. And of course, really appreciate all of our patrons who came on board here in the month of April as we are raising money for directrelief.org, which is providing PPE to doctors and nurses and community health organizations as they are on the front lines of the coronavirus. All of our new patron contributions for the month of April are being donated 100% to directrelief.org. I will also be making a matching donation to directrelief.org. So really appreciate everybody enjoying all of our patron content and also helping to support a good cause. Find out more about everything that we have going on between our patron trivia, our Survivor pregame show, and all the other patron content that we're doing in our patron Facebook community, where we have over 2,000 Survivor fans all together talking about everything that's going on in their lives and then also in everything that's going on with this Survivor season, all at robiswebsite.com/patron. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening. Take care. Have a good one. Bye.